Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time, you may press star one to ask a question. I would like to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Kevin Deal. Sir, you may begin.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kevin Deal. I'm the manager of the Educational Field Small Mine Service Group for MSHA. I'm going to be sitting in today for Jeff Duncan, who is the Director of Education Policy and Development here at MSHA. Jeff's feeling a little under weather today, so I'll be taking his spot. I'd like to thank you for joining us for MSHA's quarterly training summit. I know your time is valuable, and we have a lot of material to cover today, so we'll get right to it. Our first speaker this morning is Joseph A. Main, Assistant Secretary of Labor for Mine Safety and Health. Mr. Main.
Thank you, Kevin. And just a couple remarks. Kevin's regular job is overseeing our field services that we do in our EPD training wing of the agency. And I had an opportunity to be at the TRAM conference and really just bring everybody up to date on the fantastic work that our field folks are doing out there. We're doing more small mines visits than we ever did with our reorganized field operations. We're out talking to more stakeholders than we ever have before, and they have helped us in a very quick fashion in some of the efforts that we recently had to address the fatalities that we've had in the metal industry. Kevin, just I want to thank you and our field staff for the great work that you're doing. You know, I want to welcome everybody to our call today. This is an ongoing call that we set up in the spring of last year, and it's an opportunity for us to let folks know in the training community what we're doing and get feedback from our training community about how we can do a better job to help you. Our nation's trainers is one of the most important parts of the overall mine safety family. You all see the folks who come into your training rooms as individuals who are seeking knowledge and information on how they can prevent the injury, illness, and death in the mining industry and how they can protect themselves. So we want to help you do that job better, and we want to let you know that you are very important to MSHA in providing that service. Today, I'm going to just give a quick overview of what we're going to share with you and provide some remarks on some key things that are ongoing. First, we're going to do a review of the mining deaths and recent near misses, both in coal and metal, non-metal. We're going to talk a little bit about the metal and non-metal fall safety alert initiative that we kicked off here in October. We're going to give you an update about the education field and small mine services field activity that I just mentioned. And the recent results of the TRAM training competition with the winners that were announced during the TRAM competition. And we're also going to take some time for questions and comments. So, you know, I'd like to start first with the TRAM conference. I had an opportunity to spend some time with our trainers. I think that was about a week ago, and time travels fast here. And I want to recognize Chip Late and his associates from the Maine Aggregates Association, who has been very instrumental in working with MSHA's EFS Small Mine Services Group and the Academy through the outreach efforts that we have been launching, and to help in the development of training materials for aggregate mining associations. We really appreciate that. This collaboration will culminate in the development of a comprehensive DVD covering multiple safety topics, including workplace examination, hazard recognition, task training, and competent person training. And a finished product will be a new resource for training within the aggregate industry. And I think these are all training tools that are going to be very valuable to the entire mining community. I'd also like to give a shout-out to the Pennsylvania Aggregates Association and Concrete Association, who traveled to the Pennsylvania Bluestone Association to offer some assistance and training and safety programs for the smallest mines in the state. And this is to encourage others, and I know there's others doing the same thing, but to encourage others to help us carry out the similar functions. One of the reasons that we made the changes that we did in our field operations is to have more help from the associations, organizations, labor, industry, state, to help us, particularly reaching a number of the small mines and the small mines community. Also, the Colorado Stone, Sand, and Gravel Association, the Home Safety Association of Kansas, the NNSGA, all have been helpful in the recent efforts to address the fatalities that we've had in the metal and mining industry, and we really appreciate that and encourage more. I'd also like to recognize our partners in the state grants training programs across the country, 48 states and the Navajo Reservation that's part of that network, and also our Brookwood Sago grantees who provided essential training to miners across the nation, which we just awarded the last round of grants to. So, you know, if you look at what we're trying to do with our tool page on our website, it's another resource that we're trying to build a better model to help the mining industry self-monitor their compliance performance. We have, of course, the S&S calculator and the pattern violations calculator that mines can use to assure that they're taking appropriate action. We have the rules to live by calculator that lets every mine in the country see what their record is and how they stack up against the rest of the mining industry when it comes to compliance with the rules to live by violations, as well as the Part 75 tool that we have developed to let underground coal mines know what their compliance is with regard to the 9 key standards that we enforce and to see how they stack up with the rest of the industry as well. We added a new tool, Part 50 tool, that teaches the mining industry on how to use or how to comply with our Part 50 requirements. And I was just in Charlotte, North Carolina, about a week ago, meeting with agri associations there, and I learned that one of the state agri associations had really taken that tool and went out and started developing training within the mining community and found it to be very useful. So passing that on as new tools that are available. With regard to fatalities, that's what we measure the most and hold ourselves most accountable to here at MSHA. And we know the rest of the mining industry, I think, shares that same view individually amongst the responsibilities that they also have. If you look at where we're at, we just issued the latest quarterly update this week that showed that we had 2 deaths in coal and 5 deaths in metal and metal this last quarter. That was compared to 3 last year in coal and 5 last year in metal and metal. So far this year, we've had 25 mining deaths. 10 of those were at coal mines and 15 at metal and metal mines. And these are too many deaths in a mining industry, as we would all say, and it shows we have more work to do in order to improve mine safety. We've just ran our fiscal year numbers, which we do in the government, and we found that consistent with calendar year 2014, where coal had the lowest calendar year number of mining deaths ever, this fiscal year resulted the same with a new low for a year and a new low for a fiscal year at 14 mining deaths. We still have more work to do, and we know that some of the mine closures have played into that. But there's also, when you look at the fatal rates and the injury rates, we know the things we're doing out there are really making a difference to improve mine safety. The results of the last quarter mining deaths in both coal, metal, and metal will be shared with you shortly. On August the 3rd, 2015, we had, on that day, 3 separate accidents that led to 3 mining deaths. First time that we've seen this since back in 2002. And it was something that was a wake-up call for all of us. So on August the 5th, we had a stakeholder meeting with a number of folks in the mining industry where we increased our efforts to get out and make sure that we were doing everything that we could to prevent these mining deaths. That was increased enforcement and increased education and outreach, including walks and talks across the country, where we called upon both coal and EPD to help metal and metal in that effort. And we thank everyone for the focus that has been paid to this. And I want to particularly thank our stakeholders who are helping get the message out and are helping to let the industry know that we really need to turn around this increased numbers of deaths that we've seen since October of 2013. I won't say where we're at today. I would just say that we need to keep moving in the direction that we've laid out since the 1st of August. And I think that the actions that we're all taking are having a very positive impact on improving mine safety. We also launched an effort at the beginning of October, which in metal and metal is one of the deadliest, if not the deadliest, month that we see in the metal and metal industry. With 51 mining deaths that month since 2000, it has become a month that we really need to pay particular attention to, particularly as a lot of the intermediate mining operations are closing down for the winter, and we may have miners doing tasks that they don't normally do and engaging work activities that they normally don't do. So we've asked for the entire mining community to help us as we ramp up our enforcement, education, and outreach, our walk and talks, and again, with the assistance of EPD staff and coal staff that's been there helping us. For the continuation of the program, I'd like to turn the program over to our coal and metal staff, who will provide an update on the fatalities and serious accidents we've had in the recent time, in the course of the last quarter. And first, I'm going to turn it over to Marcus Smith from coal, and then he's going to turn it over to Larry Traynor from metal and metal. Marcus, all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Main. As Mr. Main said, I'm Marcus Smith, and I work in the Accident Investigations, Analysis, and Prevention Office here at MSHA headquarters for coal mine safety and health. I'm going to be discussing the fatalities at coal mines that occurred in the third quarter of this year. And I'm on slide 4. We had two fatalities, as Mr. Main just mentioned. One fatality occurred in Kentucky. That was a machinery fatality at an underground mine. The other fatality occurred in Alabama. That was classified as a slip or fall of person accident at a surface mine. Moving to slide 5, the fatality in Kentucky involved an electrician, and the fatality in Alabama involved a bulldozer operator. And as we discussed in the other previous two slides, on slide 6 here, one underground mine, one surface mine, one in the machinery classification, one classified as a slip or fall of person. So on slide 7, we see that on Wednesday, September 16th, a 29-year-old electrician with 9 years of mining experience was killed while replacing a load-locking valve on the cutter head jack of a continuous mining machine. Prior to working on the machine, pin boards were stacked in a single column to block the cutter head in place. The victim was positioned between the cutter boom and the pan with the load locking valve removed when the cutter head collapsed, fatally crushing the miner. Slide 8. On September 26th, a 58-year-old bulldozer operator with 10 years of mining experience was found lying unconscious on the ground next to a bulldozer. The foreman had driven the bulldozer operator to his designated work area, and after seeing that the bulldozer was stationary, he returned and found the bulldozer operator lying on the ground. First aid was started immediately by mine personnel, and they continued medical treatment until emergency personnel arrived. The miner was airlifted to the hospital, where he remained until October the 5th, where he died from his injuries. Okay, now I'd like to discuss a couple of serious accidents that we that occurred at coal mines. So on slide 10, we see that on Tuesday, August the 18th, a roof bolter received an electrical shock when he attempted to free the trailing cable to the machine from the cable guide. While pulling the trailing cable away from the broken cable guide, he touched the frame of the roof bolting machine with his other hand and received an electrical shock. The victim was wearing wet leather gloves at the time he received this electrical shock. And the trailing cable was damaged by the damaged cable reel guide. So it got damaged by that broken guide, and as he was trying to pull it free, he received the electrical shock. So moving on to slide 11. On September 21st, a loading machine operator was shocked when he attempted to lift the trailing cable that supplied power to a continuous mining machine. The investigation revealed that a pinhole existed in the outer jack of the cable, and all three of the internal insulated phase wires were smashed. And as you can see here, the pictures here give a good reminder to the type of internal damage that a cable can receive. So if, as we look at the best practices, we'll see that if there's any damage by mobile equipment or a large object, it's important to test that cable right away to see if there's any internal damage, because it may not be visible on the outside, but the damage inside the cable can be much worse. So the best practices are on slide 12. Protect electrical cables from damage, especially damage by mobile equipment. And if an electrical cable is hit, immediately and thoroughly test it to determine if the insulation has been compromised. Repair damaged cables prior to energizing them. It's important not to energize them right away, but to check them first and then repair them before they energize. Always conduct complete and thorough examinations. It's always important to properly maintain equipment, including the cables that provide the power to the equipment. Very important to wear properly maintained and adequately rated personal protective equipment. Adequately rated is very important. Task train all miners in job specifics prior to beginning their work activities. Now I'd like to turn the presentation over to Mr. Larry Trainer, who will go over the metal-nonmetal accident. Larry?
Thank you, Marcus. As Mr. May had said earlier, metal-nonmetal experienced five fatals during the third quarter of 2015. That brings our total to 15 for the year. As you see on the mine classification as far as for accidents, for the year, we've experienced four fatalities in machineries and four in falling and sliding materials, so that continues to be our leading one. On slide 15, I would like to point out that for the year, Nevada is leading. About 20% of our fatals have occurred in Nevada in our gold mining sector. And on slide 16, a third of our fatals for the year have occurred at sand and gravel operations, which is the lion's share of our mines and metal non-metal, so that's not surprising. Slide 17. I'd like to point out two things for the year, that a third of our fatals have involved contractors, and that 25% of our fatals this year have involved truck drivers. Moving to slide 18, the first fatal I'd like to discuss is the fatal that happened on July 10th, 2015. We had a dredger operator that was off that day, and the mine superintendent took over his role in trying to dislodge a clamshell bucket. In the process, the dredge flipped. There was a miner on the dredge along with the superintendent. The miner was thrown into the water. I was able to get to the shore and sustain some minor injuries, but the superintendent was trapped inside the dredge, and it took us several days to recover the victim. slide 19. On July 15, 2015, we had a contractor, and I would like to note, again, 6 months of experience. His job was to clean out this rail car. I also like to point out that there were no workplace exams taken before he started his service in this car. Also, like to, in our investigation, we also found out that talking to the other contractors on this fatal, that the guys that normally clean his cars out thought that a normal respirator was a device that would provide them oxygen when they were in a low oxygen environment in these rail cars. And I think that's really important to understand that for trainers, that we can't take for granted any time that we discuss PPEs with minors, make sure they understand their function. Slide 20. In August 3rd, this is one of the three that happened on August 3rd, a loader operator was loading out a pile, and he stepped out of his loader to take a break. And while he was taking a break, the pile slid and engulfed him. It's important to note in this fatality that this wasn't the operator's normal area that he was working. He was filling in for another operator. He was used to working in a smaller pile. They did warn him that these piles do break off, and they warned him of the dangers, but he didn't apparently listen, and he passed away. The second fatal that happened on August 3rd, again, all fatals are tragic, but this one is very tragic. A dad got his son a job there at this mine, and his job was to operate a haul truck, haul fines from his bin. He was told to stay in his truck while the truck was being loaded, but for some reason he got out of the truck and went into the bin area. And very shortly after, the bin failed, engulfing the victim. This accident happened really close out here in Leesburg, Virginia. slide 22, the last fatal that happened on August 3rd, happened out in Nevada in an underground gold mine. The operator just finished drilling out of place. He was tramming his drill uphill. He wasn't aware, apparently, when the drill steel intersected the rib, and it started to bend the drill steel. And then all of a sudden, the drill steel snapped back and struck the miner, killing him instantly. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about some serious accidents. On slide 24, I put this on here to lay off with because I had another bin failure in addition to this one, and in addition to the one we had in Leesburg. So that's really three major structural failures that happened in the third quarter of 2015, and really need to make the operators and the miners aware of the importance of structural inspections. Slide 24, the contractor driller was driving up the hill. He had an engine failure. The truck started drifting back down the haul road. You can see it at a significant grade. He went over the berm and barrel rolled, and they estimated that the truck turned over 10 times, but he was able to walk away, and he was wearing a seatbelt. On slide 26, again, due to mental fatigue, an operator fell through a grating. I think it's important to note here that it is a very common practice that operators will place a mine belt on the expanded walkway in order to prevent. It makes it easy to clean up from a coal spill and also makes it in case the expanded metal has been corroded. But anyway, it also traps moisture and makes it fatigue, and this operator fell through. And our last serious accident happened when a miner was trying to unclog a screw conveyor, used a poker rod. His arm became entangled inside the screw conveyor, and he lost his arm. Excuse me. Of these best practices, I would like to bring your attention to to two of them, mainly the examination of workplace. We continually, in metal on metal, stress that to the operators, how important, how significant that is. And also about our earlier discussion about the bends, how important it is to conduct structural inspections periodically. Thank you. I would like to now turn it over to Marvin Lichtenfeld.
Good afternoon. I'm Marvin Lichtenfeld, the Deputy Administrator for Metal Nonmetal. I want to talk about our FATO initiative and the things that we're doing and that we plan to be doing and continuing our efforts to prevent FATO accidents. As mentioned earlier, we started a seasonal safety initiative in the beginning of October, and we put out an alert on the number of fatals that occurred this time of year. And we, based on data, October is the highest month that we have for fatals. And we think it's related to the time of year that a number of the intermittent mines are shutting down for the season. They're tearing equipment down. They're doing tasks that they don't do on a routine basis and probably not adequately trained on. It's one of those, let's get her done and get it buttoned up for winter. And we're seeing an increase in fatals. So we put this alert out and published it on the Internet and emailed it to our email lists, and most of you hopefully got it. But we enlisted, Cole and EPD to help us with walk and talks, and they've been doing a great job getting the message out. Our inspectors are also doing it as they do their EO1 or regular inspections. So we've been contacting a number of miners directly with this information, and hopefully it'll make a difference. Some of the things that we did to go along with the alert, we sent a letter from the administrator to all the metal, non-metal industry. We sent it to this is one thing that we did a little different this time. We included all the miners' representatives. So we sent a letter to the miners' representatives and a copy of the hazard alert. So we hadn't been doing that in the past, and it's a good idea to get their involvement. And we also sent it to our alliances. As I said, we did a lot of walk and talks, but in addition to that, each district has been holding meetings with various associations. If you want to go to the next page, we'll just page through these. Each district has a list of the various aggregate groups that they've met with, and they've all stepped up and scheduled special meetings where their members come together, and we provide this information, and they disseminate it to their membership. So we're getting the message out, trying to continue our efforts in reducing these fatals. So the next few slides are all very similar with what's been going on in each district. We're monitoring this on a weekly basis. We're having each district on a weekly basis sending us what they did that week to further this cause. So the focus is there on our side to keep this FATO initiative going. I want to mention just a couple more things briefly, and it's on that's it there. Okay, good. We are continuing our efforts to reduce fatals with weekly hazard alerts, whether it's a serious accident or a close call or just some other message we want to get out to industry. And we're posting those on the website. And if you can see on the bottom of that page, we have it blocked in, the metal non-metal resource page. And then if you go to the next page, it shows the list of the various weekly alerts that we've published. So there's a resource there for the trainers to use. As they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words. And a couple of the ones that Larry mentioned earlier, the one with the seatbelt and the truck rolling over 10 times, if you can't make hay out of that one, I don't know what we can. It's just a great photo. That guy could probably give a good safety talk himself. But every year, we have one or two fatals that occur from people not wearing seatbelts. So, I mean, it's stuff like this that we can use, and hopefully the light bulb goes off in those people that don't wear seatbelts. Hey, it's a pretty simple way to save your life. But anyway, we're trying to continue our efforts. We appreciate everything that you do. And if you're not getting these weekly alerts, please sign up for our email list. We have over 12,000 on our list, and we're trying to get the message out. We're building the email list of miners' representatives to try to include them and get them on the weekly list. But any ideas or suggestions you guys have that we can improve on getting this message out, we'd appreciate it. But, again, we thank you for what you do and look forward to hearing your comments.
All right, this is Kevin Deal again. I'm going to cover, government just finished their fiscal year 15, so I've got some numbers for the Education Field Services group here that I want to touch base with you on. On slide 41, okay, I have 64 specialists in the field right now, and of those 64 specialists, we conducted 780 mine visits, and 50% of those were actually small mines. We did 953 instructor evaluations. That's a new record for EFSMS, the 953, and we're real proud of that. Instructor reviews, we did 1,208 instructor reviews. Training plan reviews for fiscal year 15 was 3,174. Training program field reviews, 3,769. The training class we held, this would include respirable dust classes, instructor workshops, miners' rights, Part 50, supervisor responsibility, workplace exams, and hazard recognition. We did 1,000 training classes in that area. Qualification and certification training of examinations. There was 402 of those that we conducted. Now, with the stakeholder associations and labor organizations outreach, this is something that Mr. Maynard touched on in his opening remarks. We really try to partner with labor organizations and associations to help spread the word when we're on these, especially when we're on these initiatives. And in fiscal year 15, we were able to partner with 140 mining stakeholder partnerships in 42 different states. So we're pretty proud of that fact. So far, with the newest initiative we're doing here, the seasonal initiative, we've been able to partner with 52 mining stakeholders so far, and that number continues to grow each day. Within the last two special initiatives here, the one in August and the one that we started here in October, we visited 700 mines in the initiative for August and 581 mines so far in initiative for the seasonal alert. And, again, that number continues to grow each day. So my group's been pretty busy this past year, and it looks like it's going to be pretty busy in the year to come here. So I want to cover right now we had our TRAM event. Our training resource applied to mining, or TRAM conference, was held at the National Mining Academy on October 13th through the 15th. We had training and safety professionals. And we had training and safety professionals from across the country participate, and there was something there for everyone. One of the highlights of the TRAM conference is the training materials competition. And this is just a note, since the awards are presented at the TRAM conference at our academy, one of the winners of this year's competition referred to them as the Academy Awards. So this year's winners were, in the printed materials category, was personal fall protection, personal fall arrest equipment task training guide submitted by Safe Steps Training, LLC. This is a comprehensive guide for use in hands-on fall arrest task training that can be used in the classroom and in the field. The guide is now on our trainer's Training Center page under training materials, and it's industry shared materials. You can find that training guide on there right now. It's posted as of today. Under the mixed media category, the grand prize winner was Electrical Hazards in the Mining Industry. This was submitted by Southern Central College Center for Business and Industry. This is a computer-based training program intended to provide general knowledge about electrical hazards at Part 46 mining operations. Now, we've experienced a minor glitch, but we will be making that program available to our trainers on the trainers page very soon. And we encourage all of you to share your training materials with us so we can share it with trainers across the country. If you've developed training programs or materials you're willing to share, please send them to us. We cannot accept any copyrighted materials. We will now open up for questions.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Marvin. I want to take the opportunity here to hear from our folks who are on the line with us. And, operator, if you would open up for questions and comments.
And if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Make sure your phone is not muted and record your name clearly. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. And just one moment for any questions or comments. And our first question comes from Steve Willis. So your line is open.
Yeah, I'm looking at a stakeholder letter that came out, I think it was in May. And in that letter, there was a couple of lines there one of my plant managers had a question about. It, one line said provide education along with training. And his question there was, what was the distinction between the two? And then the second question, which was the next line, it said to create adaptive and responsive approaches to finding and fixing hazards. And I was wondering if you might be able to expand on that a bit and just give us some examples, please.
Yes, this is Joe Main, and I'd be happy to answer the question. Let's take the last one first. When we talk about finding and fixing, we're talking about having examination systems in place to where miners are scheduled to work. We do thorough examinations. We find and fix the hazards so we don't expose them to them. And you'll see us say that quite a bit, but under the regulations, there's obligations by mine operators to have in place examination processes that are aimed to do just that. We have seen in the fatalities that have occurred over the last number of months, what we believe is weaknesses, and some of those where we didn't see quality examinations carried out at the mine site to detect and prevent some of the hazards. So that one is a pretty simple one that we really need to be out there as an industry doing these examinations, finding and fixing. And when IMSHA comes by to do our audit inspections, one of the things that we look for is to make sure those are in place and if there are quality examinations being made. When we talk about education and training, you know, I think if you look at it from a couple practical approaches, one is the regulations require miners to have appropriate training. That is training under Part 46 and Part 48 to educate them on the hazards that they may be exposed to so they can help, prevent, injury or illness from those. There is prescriptive requirements for training, but also there's an encompassing, part of that is that we're out there educating these miners as part of the training process. And we're constantly educating them on what the hazards are, whether that be in these training sessions that are held or on a normal work day that takes place. A lot of work sites hold safety talks where they pass on information that the worker should know about, hazards in the workplace or hazards that are showing up in other workplaces based on the information we all send to you or that you pass around yourself that identify circumstances that have led to injury or illness of miners. Those are part of the educational process. Those are also part of the training process that we really think needs to be ongoing in the mining industry. And we hope the information we put out to you is being used because we think it is vital to get this down to the miner level, the mine site level, to assure that we are making everybody aware of the kind of things that are and can cause injury, illness, and death. Hopefully that answered your question, but it's just pretty well common sense approach to making sure that the miners are trained, educated, and we have sound examinations in place to protect them. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
I show no other questions at this time.
So we have an open line at IMSHA as far as the email address that we that you can send in comments, ask questions, and we get a few of those after all the calls, and we invite those as well. And it is askmsha, M-S-H-A, at DOL.com. At DOL.gov. I've only been here for about 7 years, 6 years, so I haven't used that last SUV. But it's askmsha at DOL.gov. We're happy to respond to questions that folks may have, and please feel free to use that as a vehicle to let us know as well of how we can help you do your jobs. What can we do differently? On a separate note, we are in the process of making a major overhaul of our internet site. We're going through some last piloting to do some last checks. And very shortly, you're going to see a new website available to you, and we're going to put up both the old site with an opportunity to walk through the new site to get used to any of the changes. And we hope to have that up for hopefully about a month so folks can get familiar with the changes. We hope to make it more efficient, and we hope to make it more useful for our stakeholders out there. And, of course, we have our training page, of which we're putting the information, the training programs that that Kevin had mentioned earlier on to make it more easily accessible as we go forward. But we're planning on a major change to the whole internet site. Any other questions or comments, operator?
I show no questions.
Okay, we want to thank everybody for joining us today. And keep in mind the email address is open. We do like to get your feedback about what we are doing and your thoughts about how we could do better. Thank everybody, and we'll be looking forward to joining everyone the next quarter. Thank you very much.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.